So I'm wondering, have any of you ever taken those personality inventories to get more insight about yourself? Yeah. I think they're kind of fun and entertaining and even affirming. The one I have the most experience with is Myers-Briggs inventory. It told me that for the most part, I'm an introvert. That is, I need to take time alone to recharge my batteries. But I'm sort of almost 50-50, and that means that I also like to be around people, and that's probably a good thing in my profession. I feel energized and happy when I'm with people, especially if we're doing something purposeful, like saving the world. But singing and dancing will do almost as well. I like to be in community, especially covenanted community, where I trust the underlying promise that we are here for each other and are pledged to each other's welfare, and in this case, spiritual connection and growth. In his book, Building Powerful Community Organizations, Michael Jacoby Brown explains the idea of community this way. Community is one of those things that is hard to define, but when you are in it, you know it. It's a feeling that you are not alone, that you are part of something greater than yourself. But yet, even when you are in it, you are still yourself. It doesn't swallow you up. Rather, it builds you up. It is not all for you, and you are not all for it. In community, there are people around whom you like, although you probably do not like all of them equally. The people of the community are there for you when you need them, and you will be there for them when they need you. One way you care for each other in this community is through the pastoral care group. The group reaches out to people who are sick or who have had surgery. They send cards on your behalf and visit folks who can't get here, bringing messages that we all still care about them. We want them to know that we are thinking about them and that they are still connected. It's good for the soul and promotes healing to know that there is a group of people, our chosen tribe, that feels their absence. You are still part of this church, even if your seat here in the sanctuary is vacant. We can still see you there. Since coming here, I have spoken individually with more than 30 people from this congregation. I've asked, what's important to you about this place? What are the strengths and challenges of this church? Over and over, people tell me about the community and the strong lay leadership. And I have seen this in action firsthand. When times get rough for people personally, the community comes together and reaches out. When someone isn't here, the rest of you get concerned. You've told me that you miss people who are hurting, that you have been hurting, and yet here you are. You are here because this place is too important to you. Because even though it's hard to live with questions that can't be answered, with the mystery, you have to trust that the people in positions of authority did the best they could. You vested that authority in them when you elected them. Would you have made the same decision? Would you have reached the same conclusions? We don't know. We are not in control. We are vulnerable when someone else is making the decisions. And of course, we don't like that. It takes great spiritual maturity to be in that position and yet stay in the game. And that says a lot about all of you. But here's the thing. There's a lot more coming your way. You will have to continue trusting folks that you've elected to do the work. That arrangement is called representative democracy. We don't have direct democracy all the time because that only works in really small organizations. So unless you want to be very small, you have to grapple with a few things that Unitarian Universalists have traditionally often had serious difficulty with. Authority. Ambiguity. Trust. As you use, we often want to see, feel, and touch before we trust. Yet we have to authorize leaders to do the work of the church. And in time, the search committee, who will help you select and call your next settled minister. There is yet time for that, a little more than a year. So you must come to the place where you can invest trust in them. And that's why healing is so crucial for your future. You have to do the hard, personal, and communal work of healing. You have to have faith in the goodwill and the wisdom of fellow members of this community. That work is intangible, but you can see the evidence when it exists. As Anne Lamont says in Traveling Mercies, broken things have been on my mind as the year lurches to an end, because so much broke and broke down this year in my life and in the lives of people I love. Lives broke, hearts broke, health broke, minds broke. In the Advent season, our preacher Veronica said that this is life's nature, that lives and hearts get broken, those of people we love and those of people we'll never meet. She said the world sometimes feels like the waiting room in an emergency ward, and that we, who are more or less okay for now, need to take the tenderest possible care of the more wounded people in the waiting room until the healer comes. You sit with people, she said, you bring them juice and graham crackers. Here in this congregation, that work has already begun. We will take another step this afternoon in our healing circle ritual. But even after that ritual, all the healing will not be complete. It's going to take some time. In a litany for those not ready for healing, Dr. Yolanda Pierce admonishes us, let us not rush to the language of healing before understanding the fullness of the injury and the depth of the wound. Let us not rush to offer a Band-Aid. So during our ritual this afternoon, we will seek to understand the fullness of the injury, the sadness, the anger, the disillusionment, and the fear. That's hard stuff. But feelings must be acknowledged. However, it's important to say that these are feelings that, if we truly listen to one another and care about each other and stay steadfast, will deepen and enrich our relationships. Let's not keep them secret or silenced. then they would only fester and pull us down in a dysfunctional spiral. And let us not blame. Do you know Brené Brown? She's authored several books, writing on the challenges of shame and the power of vulnerability. She did a TED talk that propelled her into the spotlight. It's worth watching. I've also seen a 3-minute animated video that she did featuring blame. So this is how the story goes. She was pouring her second cup of coffee that morning when she dropped the cup. It smashed to the floor and splashed coffee all over her outfit. Her instantaneous thought was to blame her husband, Steve. He was at work. Nowhere around. She got to it this way. The night before, Steve had had a late night meeting. She really can't sleep until Steve gets home, so she asked him to be home by 10 o'clock so she could get her rest. He stayed out till 10:30. Having missed that half hour of sleep, Brené needed a second cup of coffee that morning. All Steve's fault. So whose fault is it? That's what we want to know. Brené says she would actually rather it be her own fault than no one's fault. And that's because placing blame, even if it's on ourselves, gives us the illusion of being in control. Brown says blame is the discharge of discomfort and pain. Discharging pain is something that we all need to do. But is blame a healthy way for us personally or communally? Brown goes on to argue that blame has an inverse relationship with accountability. Accountability, by definition, is a vulnerable process. For example, if we are willing to be accountable for our own feelings, we will call the person that we're having trouble with and talk to them directly. We might say, thus and so happened, and my feelings are really hurt. Brown tells us that that takes tenacity and grit to actually do that. Instead of talking it out directly, many of us would rather express ourselves through rage. Or maybe we choose to gossip with someone to release our anxiety. Anything, instead of speaking directly, because that conversation makes us vulnerable. We know that blame is very corrosive in relationships and in our communities. When we blame, we miss an opportunity to be empathetic, because while we're blaming, we can't really listen or hear the person we're with. I've been so impressed with the Amicus team here, who give people the opportunity to speak and listen with honesty, respect, and support. When there's a conflict between the members, the Amicus team will provide a structure in which to have a vulnerable conversation. They will serve as witness. Amicus is one of the signs of abundance in this community. Another thing we do is to fill in the narrative and discharge our anxiety through gossip. A short time ago, a family member of mine had a serious health issue. Word got to me through a third party. Just before I was about to reach out, the person's spouse contacted me. The patient didn't want anyone to know. I was taken aback. Here I was, ready to rush in and provide love and support and care. How could this person not want me to know? How could they deprive themselves of the love and support that I would be providing? It took me about a day to remember and realize that that person had every right to their privacy, that they have a right to say that they want things kept confidential. It's not my business. It's not my decision. Holy cow, this is really hard stuff. You can see why it takes spiritual maturity. Yes, living together in community can be hard. It can be challenging. It takes real tenacity and grit. Because being in community can mean being uncomfortable, being vulnerable, not in control. But of course, there's another side to that coin, and I think Maria really stated it well for us. Here's another way, by way of Lois Smith, who wrote, "A great community creates conditions where people can fall in love. It's a place where we can make a fuss about one another, a place where we can ask, how did I ever live without you?" Community is, of course, more than being vulnerable and having to do hard work. It's even more than finding lasting friendships. Community actually creates abundance. True community is the opposite of competition. When we're in community, we're not trying to see who can win. Instead, we're doing our best to join hands and build something together. Something larger than ourselves. Something that builds us up while together we build a better world. Something that will live beyond us. Something that's fun. Whether you're putting on the auction or at your place of work, it's really true that many hands make light work. But only if you're pulling together in the same direction. Peter Block and John McKnight, authors of the book Abundant Community, say that it takes a village to do more than raise a child. It is the key to a satisfying life. It turns out we need our neighbors and a community to be healthy, to produce jobs, to protect the land, to care for the young and the elderly, and those on the margin. We all have gifts to offer, even the most seemingly marginal among us. You all take this community seriously. You show up even when you're hurting. Maybe especially. I see it here in this community every day. It's remarkable how people always seem to be ready to pitch in, to do their fair share and more. And in so many, many ways, when something needs to be done, people just seem to gather. When there's a challenge, people look to each other for support. This, too, is a form of creating abundant community. And community, especially abundant community, takes kindness. We depend on others for that. In her poem, Kindness, Naomi Shaib Nye wrote, "Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows, and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore, only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. And here's what I say as someone who has come to you only recently, but has seen many congregations overcome many challenges, that what you have here is too important to relinquish.